Okay, so we waited 5 minutes, so let's get started. And thanks for showing up. Mostly this is going to be a lecture trying to get you a little more on the information extraction. It's actually a very active topic right now in this area, in the whole area of information retrieval, web. There's a large number of papers being written on this stuff, and in fact, one of the interesting things is that the NLP, natural language processing, I mean, obviously we'll see in a minute that information extraction can be seen as the natural language processing that can be done fast. Okay, it's not complete, but you know, you're trying to do it for certain specific circumstances where you might be able to undo the mapping and then get back from the text to relational version. Okay, that's what we were discussing last time. And in fact, because of the interest in information extraction, NLP, the natural language processing conferences, have become extremely popular now. For a while, they were sort of, I may have mentioned in the beginning of the semester that information retrieval conferences used to be a reasonably sleepy affair. Nobody would go there until web started, and then suddenly you can't keep them out. You know, just too many people going. And the same thing for natural language processing. For a while, it was seen as too hard a problem. Some hardy souls were working on it, but there hasn't been that much interest. And now, like, everybody is into applied natural language processing. And there are, I think, 3 or 4 conferences. One is Kolling, one is ACLU, interestingly enough. It's Association for Computational Linguistics, ACL. And then there is an NACL, which is the North American Computational Linguistics Conference. And there's just a large number of them. And then information extraction papers get presented in all sorts of places, in the information retrieval conferences, database conferences, and NLP conferences. Okay, what I'd like to try and give you is sort of both in the beginning, in the first 10-15 minutes or so, I want to give you the overall picture, you know, from a tutorial that these guys Cohen and McCallum made. They have a nice, at least a 2-year-old picture of where is most of the work in information extraction being done, and then spend the rest of the class in like one third each, giving you 3 specific ideas for information extraction. The reason I pick those is because those actually can be understood based on what we have done in the course. Okay, one of them would be essentially directly writing path expressions. The other would be using search engines to check whether a fact is true or false. The kind of thing we did in the beginning of the semester when I said, does water flow upwards or downwards? And let's ask Google and see whether it has more hits for water flows upwards or water flows downwards. That looked like a funny thing to do, but in fact, we'll talk about a technique which, you know, extracts a lot more facts and then checks which of them are actually facts. It's kind of an interesting thing that one way you can extract facts is, I think this guy, what's his name, Linus Pauling, I may have mentioned this to you guys. Linus Pauling is one of those few rare people who got 2 Nobel Prizes. And then somebody asked him, so how do you do so much good work? And he says, I get a lot of ideas and I throw away the bad ones. Okay, so that's basically the generate and test process. One way of extracting facts is make lots and lots of possible facts and check which of them are actually accurate. And to check whether or not they're accurate is when you can use the search engines to see, you know, which one seems to have more hits. Okay, we'll look at an idea based on that. And a final idea would be essentially, it's more of an application of essentially, if you remember, we talked about this picture, right? So if you have text here, and you know, we never really hope to be able to learn this as of now yet. However, suppose I gave you a large amount of ontology in the background, and as I said, this kind of background knowledge, if somebody writes it once, then other people can just copy it into their computers, unlike humans who have to learn it inefficiently, you know, one by one by one. Just because your friend knows some idea doesn't necessarily mean you would know it. You still have to take a course. But computers, that's a much simpler issue because you essentially can just copy somebody else's ontology once they have it, right? And so suppose I have a big ontology for some subset of the common sense world, and I have some text, then the issue then would be which of these pieces of the text correspond to which parts of this ontology. So this is sort of tagging, saying, oh, this looks like a human being, this looks like a job, this looks like an electronics equipment. Okay, and so this tagging essentially, rather than let humans do it, you can try to say there is automated services which will try to look at everybody's pages and tag them. Okay, and if you tag them, then in fact one of the interesting questions will be where would these tags be kept, and the idea would be you would have like a centralized tag server which takes for everybody's page, you know, it has extra annotations saying you didn't even annotate your page, but somebody else annotated your page with saying this particular entity corresponds to this particular class. And then that would essentially give you all this information now, because this is already background, this text has been written by you, there is a middleman somewhere who essentially connects the entities in this text to this ontology. Then you can do inference, interesting kinds of inference. And this idea is actually called, you know, there was a very interesting system called SemTag and Seeker, which about 5 years back got the, you know, dubbed best paper award for doing this. So I will also talk a little bit about that. So those are the three ideas I'll talk about, specific ideas I'll talk about. But before that, I'll give you some overall picture of, you know, what kinds of things are being done in information extraction. Okay, so these three will be just 3 points in the spectrum of things being done. Okay, so the general idea is you have a whole bunch of pages, and by extracting facts, base level facts from these pages and putting them in a database, you can then support database style query processing on it. Okay. Now, of course, if you have it in the database, you can do querying, SQL style querying, you can do search on it, and you can also, of course, do mining, etc., for patterns and so on. Okay. Notice that IE only does fact extraction. The idea of ontologies and how generalized facts are related to other facts, that's just considered background knowledge. You are currently not focusing on learning those. Okay. Now, so an example would be, suppose you have text like this. This is free-flowing text. In fact, one of the things we'll see is there are different kinds of text over which you can do extraction, and some kinds of text are templated text, the canned text. You know, whenever we get, you know, templated letter, we hate it, right? Because you know that they have written this exact letter to everybody, and they just put your name in it, okay? We might hate it, but machines love it because they have the same exact template, and so they will be able to actually extract right pieces of information from that template. So those are easier, but this is slightly more preform text. So suppose I have an article like this, then what information extraction needs to do is, you know, at some level, it needs to be able to segment this into pieces. Okay, that's segmentation. And so I got Microsoft Corporation, CEO, Bill Gates, etc. How do I do this is a different issue. You need to be able to do this. And then you need to, for each segment, it's an entity of some form, and you need to classify it into the known classes of entities. And say, for example, Microsoft Corporation is a company, Bill Gates is a CEO, so you need to be able to classify that. So you have a classification. And then, so you classify these into one class. These green ones are one class, the red ones are a different class, and then the blue ones are a third class. Now, you and I know that the blue ones are the positions, the green ones are the corporations, the red ones are the actual people. Okay, but essentially an extractor would just, you know, will try to extract these kinds of patterns. Okay. And then association, you will basically are associating these three, and then you will have to realize that this and this is essentially saying the same information. So you would not put two different facts into the database. So you are deduplicating. So you cluster these two, and this is one cluster, this is one cluster. So then at the end of this, you can just have a little database saying the name, title, organization, name of the people, their title, and the organization where they belong to. That's an example. Okay, it's not full NLP. I'm not trying to explain to you what happened here. I have a specific set of slots to fill. And I am looking for how to fill them given the text. So that's a kind of a narrower natural language processing. Okay, so information extraction versus NLP, it's attempting to find some of the structure and meaning in the hopefully template-driven web pages. Okay, the more template-driven they are, the easier it is to find, you know, how to fill the slots. Okay, the simplest case would be the wrappers that that I mentioned at the end of last class, and I'll talk about to you again today, where pretty much the specific pieces of information will always occur in the exact same place. So for example, for Amazon, when you open a page for an item, the title of the book will always occur approximately in the same place. The author will occur right below it. Then the price will occur a little below it. Okay? It's not like they will write an entire big text, you know, or in iambic pentameter saying what the title of the book is and who wrote it, etc., you know, at the end of the second page. Okay. Although you can do it, if you're sending a mail to your friend, you could write pretty much anything, and you know that they might get mad at you for, you know, writing something in such a circumlocutious way, but they'll understand it. Whereas information extractors, if it's a simple template, it's much easier to undo the mapping and go back to the relational structure. Okay. So of course, as IE becomes the problem, of course, of living in the middle is, If you are defining yourself by I am better than information retrieval and I am less than NLP, then at some point of time you will keep going up and you will be equivalent to NLP. So information extraction, the more and more ambitious it becomes essentially equivalent to natural language processing. So it's sort of a middle ground right now, and it's not a very well-defined middle ground either. Okay, in fact, one idea, of course, is you can say that, you know, given that Ramayana example, the ontology, the background knowledge, is something that we are not trying to learn. We are only trying to learn, you know, given some relations, what the slot fillers are for those relations. Okay, you have a specific idea as to what you're looking for, and then you're looking for instances of it. But, you know, it can become more general, in which case you'll start becoming more and more like NLP. Now, one thing about information extraction, and it's actually also true as to why natural language processing has become extremely interesting again of late, is web makes available massive, massive amounts of text, very easily available. So in the past, training, if you're trying to learn how to do natural language processing, then, you know, where is your data going to come from? And now actually the entire web is available to you, and, you know, and so you can use all sorts of files as training data. Okay, so information extraction has basically can depend upon massive amounts of information, and in fact part of the reason why, you know, as I said, you could check the accuracy of a fact by calling the search engine. Now, how was that possible? It was only possible because there's a massive amounts of data, and you don't expect that you would be easily misled by that much amount of data. Okay. So there was before, if you have to look for some sort of a history for information extraction, which is distinct from the history of natural language processing, which is a much more longer standing problem, it is that, you know, there was a while, for a while, people were in DARPA, they were interested in this thing called Message Understanding Conference, where they essentially said, you don't need to understand the entire thing, you don't need to do natural language processing, but you need to read the newspaper articles and sort of see if there were any terrorist events being described, if there are any industrial joint ventures being described in a particular, you know, article, if there is any company management changes being described in these articles. So focused understanding. So you're reading this only to understand whether there's a terrorist event in this particular article, whether there is this in this article. Okay, so that's sort of a progenitor of information extraction. Okay, you're reading with, you're not trying to read everything and understand what is written there. You're trying to see if this thing describes me something about a company management change. If so, I will remove that. I'll basically get that out of that sheet. Now, when you do this, you would be putting it in some sort of a database. That's essentially what information extraction is, that, as we described. Okay. And they continue to be very interested in this stuff. You know, there are actually ongoing projects here where people hope that by reading web articles, they can essentially figure out relations between different countries, relations between different political groups, and so on. Okay. Now, to the extent they can do it at all, it would be because they're looking for a specific pattern and they're trying to fill in the fillers for those patterns. Okay, so you can think of IE as NLP with a specific bent. And a classic case of that is, I mean, when you have, it's sort of like having blinders on. You know, the horses have blinders on so that they'll only go in the direction that they're supposed to go, not look around. And sometimes by not looking around, you can get into, you might miss opportunities. You know, I'm sure many of you probably heard about this joke of on the Mars, Spirit and Rover are going, I mean, I'll send that cartoon to you. I mean, there's a variations of this, but Spirit and Rover are looking for some rock samples and the alien is coming in front of them. And the Spirit and Rover are telling them, get out of the picture, I'm trying to get the rock sample. And it's funny because the moment you see an alien, all other goals are much less interesting. But Spirit and Rover only think their entire life is to do rock samples. Okay, when you put blinders on, you can miss information. But on the other hand, it's possible to just do that task. That's what IE is, really. Okay, now what makes IE on web different and easy? By the way, there are donuts. Please help yourself, because by the time we are done, it'll be lunchtime. And, you know, I would hate your moms and dads to call me and say, you're just spoiling our kids' lunch. But anyway, there is a lot of structure on the web. You know, normal language has grammatical structure, which you understand already. And, you know, but over and beyond that, so grammatical structure of language can be thought of in terms of parse trees, noun phrases, word phrases. Remember parts of speech tagging that most of you have been forced to do in your English classes when you were young? And you didn't know why should you do it. In fact, it's extremely useful. It turns out that once you have a parse tree of a sentence, I might be able to write extraction patterns based on the parse tree. And I'll show you an example of that. Now, that we know existed for any language because all languages have grammar. Okay. But what's interesting is that's not the only type of grammar. On the web, basically everything is in HTML, right? So you essentially have the layout grammar. So for example, Amazon will always put the title here, below that will put the author, below that will put the price. That's a grammar. They'll never put price first, then title, then author. Do you understand what I'm saying? So that's a grammar. Okay. And similarly, if you look at the HTML page, HTML itself has DOM structure. We talked about this. HTML is XML. XML has a tree structure. The tree structure is root, the elements, and then sub-elements, all the way to the data. Okay? So you can actually say that the data has this parse tree in terms of the DOM tree. And so I can write extraction patterns over the DOM tree, just as I can write extraction patterns over the syntactic tree. These are completely different. But I can write extraction patterns on either of them. And if I write extraction patterns on the DOM tree, that's essentially what wrappers do. You know, remember I talked about highly templated text. You can reverse the mapping by essentially just saying, you know, skip, 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 pick, skip, skip, pick. Okay, that can also be written as, here is a path expression. At the end of that path, whatever is there, that becomes the city name. Here is another path expression. At the end of that path, whatever is there, that will be the country name. Okay, so if you have a list of, an HTML list of, you know, countries and capitals, then these path expressions will tell me how to get out the country names and the capital names out of this. Because presumably people use the same exact layout to write them. Okay. Of course, you cannot stop people from writing one page in one line saying the capital of India is New Delhi, and then in the next sentence writing Washington DC is the capital of USA. These two sentences obviously have two different structures in terms of layout. In one case, the country name is coming first, the capital name is coming next. The other case, capital name is coming first, country name is coming next. For you guys, you can understand, because you can understand English, you can see exactly what the sentence is going to say. Okay. If you have to deal with that kind of a data for an extractor, it's harder, because now it changed the pattern. In each sentence has a different pattern. But if it is really templated text, you most of the time you will have the exact same template for all the sentences. And that's what makes information extraction be successful. Okay, so to the extent the world is predictable, you can essentially use that predictability. Whereas if you know NLP quite well, then, I mean, if you know how to understand language, you don't need those kinds of crutches. Okay, so here are some examples of all kinds of structure that is there on grammar. Apart from just the syntactic grammar, there is the HTML, DOM tree grammar, there is the layout grammar. Okay, and in fact, people have done work in trying to extract information exploiting each kind of grammar. For example, if you see New York Times, right, I mean, they have this column structure with the last column oftentimes being a bunch of sub boxes with, you know, most popular articles or something else, etc. That's a grammar. That page always looks exactly that way. Okay, and you should be able to extract if, for example, you are trying to track how fast are the Arizona immigration stories raising in the top 10 articles in New York Times, which, by the way, I was very pleasantly surprised that we are in 3 of the top 10 articles are about Arizona immigration in New York Times. So we finally made it to the big times, right? So you could essentially, it's painful for me to keep checking every 3 minutes, but I can write a little extractor which just keeps checking, and then writes down, what are the top 10. But then for it to be able to extract, it should know where that information is. And I provide a little extractor. Okay, how many of you have run, any of you know Emacs? Okay, Emacs style editors in general, you can write macros, which can do small, basically arc expressions, set expressions to change the, pick certain pieces of text. Because you know exactly where, let's say suppose, I have a bunch of lines in the editor, and then I want to pick the last word of each of the lines. I can write a little macro which just repeatedly does that, right? Extractors are doing something similar. And when I'm defining macro, by the way, in Emacs, and I'm sure it's true in other editors too, sometimes I don't need to know how to write the macro. I can show how to extract the text. In Emacs macros, essentially you say I'm starting to define the macro. Here are the commands I make. Here is how I got to the last word. Here is how I removed the last word. I took a copy of it, put it in a new buffer. End macro. Now I ask Emacs to do this macro 85 times. It will just basically go to each of the lines until 85 lines have been exhausted, and it will get me those words out. It's very useful for me. Okay. Similarly, information extractors for very templated text can also be developed in this semi-automated form. There are the systems out there which will allow you to sort of point in the HTML in the browser. This is the region of interest. And then behind the scenes, the system can see where that region is in the DOM tree and write a little extractor to get to that point. So you don't even need to know the path expressions. Somebody else can write it for you. If it is very templated, yes.
So I is about the syntactic structure, not about the semantic.
Maybe not. I have no idea how to explain that. I think in some sense, IE is what I said, which is it is in this middle level. It is the relational level. So it's more semantic than IR, less semantic than full natural language understanding. Okay? No, what I'm saying is you are trying to make it sound like it's a matter of degree, but the whole Ramayana example was that it's not a matter of degree. It's not one and zero. There is amounts of information you can use to answer more and more expressive queries. You know, you can just get me files that have keywords, you can get me, you know, database style query processing, or you can get me logical query processing, depending upon how much background knowledge I have. Yes?
Is there a concept of state in information extraction? So when you came into ambiguity and start a state.
That's the difference. So there are lots of techniques. For example, when you're doing segmentation, and I'll get to you in a minute, there are many different techniques for doing information extraction. Right now, there isn't too much that's holding the field together. You know, anybody has a particular application, they'll write an extractor for it. Okay, and in some extractors, there's a concept of state, and you can essentially think of there being an HMM, hidden Markov model, with the words being the observable parts of the hidden Markov model, and then you try to find, you know, the most likely sequence that the hidden Markov model went through. And in, for some kinds of information extraction, those kinds of models are very useful. Okay. Okay. So let's look at some more, drill down a little bit more in terms of the types of information extraction tasks that are out there that are being, you know, tried at least 2 years back, but you know it's kind of expanding as we speak. So you could be stuck with text paragraphs without any formatting. You could be stuck with essentially grammatical sentences and some formatting. You can be stuck with non-grammatical snippets, but very structured. So you pretty much know this would be the professor's name, this would be the affiliation, the status of the professor, these are the areas in which they work in. So, and you know, whoever made this page used a very specific layout. And there is no point in not using that layout in essentially writing your relational structure of this page. Okay, and then you have tables where essentially at least the pieces, this is sort of a great thing about tables is the XML version of the table is very easy to get because each column is a tag. We don't know what those tags are, but each column is a tag. Okay, so you at least know what the fields are, and then you can write extractors in terms of those fields. Yes. That's okay. The point is, so for example, this is why I said IE is NLP for very specific kinds of tasks, okay? So a four-year-old, maybe a middle school student can do better than any of the IE techniques out there on any random single file you give them. But IE might essentially say, okay, I can write an extractor which looks at all the university faculty pages. Writes down the list of faculty, their affiliations, their interests, you know, research interests and so on. If I have a huge big database of that, I can support all sorts of interesting mining. For example, you know, are all the people doing work in pattern recognition coming mostly from Middle East, for example? I can check that. I can mine such patterns. Okay, or I can also say which area seems to have most professors in computer science these days. I can answer that. It was much harder to answer given any single page. So this idea, once I start extracting, I'm putting it in database, I'm also integrating information across pages because I can answer queries in aggregate. I'm answering queries using information from all the different pages. Okay, so you know you may be stuck with any of these. Obviously, being stuck with this is harder than being stuck with this. I hope you understand that. Okay, because this is way more templated. Okay, pattern scope. If you are trying to extract a pattern, remember a pattern essentially is a relation and the words and the entities in the relation. Remember, because that middle thing, that the RDF triples approximately are what we are trying to extract, or if not RDF triples, NRE relation, base facts are what we are trying to extract. Okay, so the question of course is when we are extracting these facts, what kinds of, how are these patterns spread over the page? Okay, for example, if the name is here, for example, first name, last name tend to be together. Professor and the professor's interest may be close to each other or may be far away from each other. professor and professor's university may be close from each other, close to each other, or far away from each other. Okay, you know, spatially as well as in the text. So, for example, you know, here is formatting based. You know, the pattern scope might be, you might be able to say that title will always be occurring here in the Amazon pages. There is nothing in English language which says that the title of the book should be put on the top. But Amazon essentially uses the same template to show the books to you. You might say that's very boring. Why don't you, you know, show, for, depending on the book, some books put the book, you know, the picture here. For some books, put the picture here. Some books put the author here, some books put the title here. You know, you could say that, and if you do that, people will understand. Okay? But even people will get little mad at the system, because, you know, it should be easy for me to pick up the patterns. And if it is easy for you, it should also be easy for your extractor. So this is formatting based, this is layout based, you know, and, you know, for example, all CVs approximately have similar layout. Now again, when I said approximately, there's always slight variations. Okay, for example, sometimes Amazon might put this title in, you know, big letters. Sometimes it might put slightly smaller letters. So if you wrote an extractor which said, look for things that start with H2 in the HTML, and then Amazon decided the H2 looks too ugly, let's write an H3, then you will fail. Okay? Okay, so this is layout based, and then there is also wide and non-specific. So for example, across this, if I'm going to ask a question such as, if I want to answer, is there a conflict between planning talks and information integration talks in this conference, which both of which I want to attend, can you tell me, you know, how many times am I stuck with having to choose between one type of talk? Okay, that's a reasonable task that I might be interested in. I might be writing an information extractor for it, but then it's now stuck with the pattern. Essentially, is, you know, the only the paper names are here, and you need, you know, their different papers might occur different places. Okay. Now, pattern complexity, the kind of pattern you're looking for, would also have an impact on whether or not it will be easier to write an extractor. And moreover, when you extract, normally when information extractors say when we extracted a fact, they not only extract it, but they sort of try to verify if the fact they extracted is actually true in some way. Okay? So the confidence also matters. Okay? So the if you have closed set, so for example, he was born in Alabama, the big Wyoming sky. This is essentially, all of these are states. And there are only 50 states. Okay? So you can check whether or not you got the state name. Because if it is present here, if there is a word present in this text, which also is present in your list of states, then that is a state name that corresponds to this particular tuple. Okay? Regular sets. Phone numbers always have a certain disjunctive structure, may not be exact structure. So some people want to write, we do know that they have 3, 3, and 4 numbers in US at least. Except some people write these three in, you know, parentheses with a space, and then these two with this. And some people write it this way. Some people write the whole thing together. And we read all of them. Okay, so when you are extracting phone numbers, for example, when you're extracting phone numbers, then you need to essentially use these regular expressions. You know, basically either this regular expression or this regular expression or this regular expression. If it matches in the file, then that might be a phone number, and then give it to me. Now, by the way, you know who actually does a lot of information extraction? I mean, a couple of days back in New York Times, there was this very interesting article that the pornography industry is way ahead of every other industry in actually exploiting the internet. Oftentimes, they are the guys who figure out all sorts of interesting things that can be done. For example, pornography industry was apparently one of the first which would take your credit card number, okay, online, because, you know, obviously they want to make money too. And then, of course, now, you know, Amazon also takes your credit cards on online. Okay? So anyway, one of the interesting things is, you know, similar to that, spam mailers are interested in getting email addresses. As when you are shown a page, all they care about is there an at sign? If there is an at sign, take the thing before, the thing after, that would be an email address. Throw it into the email list. Okay, that's how you get a huge number of spam mails, because there are the crawlers out there. Essentially, they're not just crawling the pages for the words, they're also extracting patterns. The specific pattern they are interested in is this a very specific regular expression, which is something dot something at something dot something dot something. That's one point. Otherwise, it could be something at something dot something, or something dot something dot something at something dot something dot something. These are all the ways you write emails, email addresses. You pick any of these, you put in your huge big database, you have extracted information. And they were one of the best, first extractors of information, you know, because they had, you know, economic motive for it. Here are complex patterns. This is something that people are interested in significantly, which is, you know, how do you figure out an address that's written, even if it is typed, you know. Of course, U.S. postal system for the longest time was interested in actually handwritten addresses, how to extract the actual structure from it. But then, even if it is typed, they can, you know, vary over multiple different structures. Okay, some people will just have two-line address, and in India, especially, we tell the postman exactly how to come to our house. You would more or less give them like a paragraph description. You know, you come here, and there will be a petrol pump, and make a right turn, and there will be our house. Okay, so it will be a nice little, you know, textual information, and you still need to get from that what is the address. In US, it's much more, you know, cut and dry. You know, it's just mostly three lines or two lines. But getting the information from multiple different addresses is still interesting. Okay, and then you can start having ambiguous patterns. You don't quite know whether it's a person name or not. If you're supposed trying to look for person names, okay, from the text, so that you can see how many times a particular person has been mentioned. Okay, now. So one of these interesting things is, I have a friend whose name is Dan Weld, and I keep telling him that at least I can say that if I look for my last name, I'm the top one in the search list. Whereas if I look for Weld, he's not even in the first page, because Weld happens to be welding, welding supplies, arc welding, gas welding, and then about 10th page, the Dan Weld will come. Okay. The interesting thing is that basically if I'm extracting people's names, sometimes these words also might have other meanings, and so hope, for example, could be part of the person's name. It could be just an English word, you know, hopes and dreams. And you can read this and see this is a person's name in this particular case. But I can change the structure of this sentence such that it would not be person's name, but it would be a word, the hope. Okay? So this becomes more like natural language processing. You need to kind of disambiguate. Okay. Now, when you are extracting, what are you extracting? As I said, you are extracting relationships. Okay? Now, the relationships essentially can be oneary relations, that is person X. Get me all the X's, like that person X is true. Okay? Two-ary relationships, married XY. Get me all the X's and Y's such that X is married to Y. N-ary relationships, you know, chess game with the referee and the player 1 and player 2, for example. And extracting each of these is a different kind, it has a different level of complexity. It turns out single entity extraction is much simpler. Of course, each of these, this is a person X, this is a location X. And you can write an extractor for locations, you can write an extractor for persons, you can write an extractor for email addresses. And those will all be single entity extractions. Okay? Binary relationships, person title and person name and the title. Person name and then our company location, company name and the location in which it is in. And the ternary or n-ary relationships, here the succession of relation. In General Electric, the title CEO passed from Jack Welch to Jeffrey Immelt. Okay, so that's the n-ary relation. Now, which one are you extracting? If you're extracting these, obviously it's harder. If you're extracting these, it should be easier. Whatever techniques you're using, it should be easier to extract these than these. You shouldn't be surprised at that. Okay. Now, how do you evaluate, if you wrote an extractor, how do you evaluate its effectiveness? Right? Usually precision and recall, okay. Okay, so precision recall idea is, so suppose this is a sentence here, Michael Kearns and Sebastian Cheung will start Monday's tutorial followed by Richard Karp and Martin Cook. And my extractor is trying to find the persons from this sentence. The ground truth is this, these are all the persons in this page, right? And but my extractor said Michael Kearns is one name, Sebastian, it didn't somehow think this is part of the name. And then Monday, it thought was a person, okay? Which isn't surprising. Actually, people have named their kids Wednesdays and Fridays and all that fun stuff. So, you know, I mean, this extractor was ahead of its time. So, Monday is a person. Richard is one person. M. Karp is another person. Martin Cook is another person. So, it found more persons and also lost some persons. Exactly like in this case, is it good or bad? It depends on precision versus recall. The number of correctly predicted segments by the number of predicted segments. You can, and then recall is number of correctly predicted segments by the number of true segments. Remember, just like in IR, you can increase one without, you know, without caring about the other. If you want to have perfect recall, you say every subset of contiguous words, every sequence of contiguous words is a person. Suppose you say Michael is a person, Michael Kearns is a person, Michael Kearns and is a person, Kearns and is a person, Sebastian Cheung is a person and Sebastian is a person. Suppose I do this, I'll have 100% recall because all the real persons have to be a subset of this. But my precision would be close to zero because I talked too much and most of it was junk. Right? So you will again evaluate the extractors in terms of precision and recall. And when you have both precision and recall and you want to convert it to a single measure, just like in IR, you would use F measure. Okay? So harmonic mean of precision and recall. Now, the reason I brought this up is because if you wanted to get a feel for what is the currently possible F measures for this versus this versus this. I said this is harder, this is somewhat easier, this is easiest. So, can we get numbers for that? It turns out named entity recognition, which is basically single, one array predicate filling, okay, that you can get between 80% to 90% accuracy. F1, 80% to 90%. Binary relation extraction falls to 60%, 70%, 80%. N-array relation extraction can be worse. Now, these two assume you are actually trying to do this from normal text. Okay? But if you have a highly templated text, it turns out, and it turns out that essentially it's the list of people's names and their social security numbers. Okay? So, and it's all being listed in one single list, I can write a simple pattern extractor. And that would have pretty much 100% accuracy in getting person names. Okay, so for the wrappers, it's much more accurate. You get close to 100% accuracy. But then they assume that all the text is in one particular format. To the extent your input text is all in one particular format, you would win. You know, it doesn't really matter whether it's binary or n-array. Did you get that point? So binary or n-array distinction is harder if you're trying to do it from unformatted, free-flowing text. But if I agree to write each sentence, suppose I have a website which tells me succession, CEO succession, and it somehow assumes people are going to read it. So for each CEO succession, it writes like this: in General Electric, the position CEO went from Jack Welch to Jeffrey Immelt in 1999. And the next sentence, again, the exact same format. Next sentence, again, is the exact same format. Okay? So if that is the case, then you should be able to just get this n-array relationship. Bam, bam, bam. Each sentence is exactly the same format, and so you know exactly how to fill the structure. Okay? So unwrapping can get much, much higher precision and recall than normal text. Okay? Now, this is basically what I think you were asking earlier. What kinds of techniques have been used? The techniques used in IE run the gamut, okay? And they can be from, if I happen to just find out what states are named in this file. Well, I know all the states' names, I just have to check whether those words are occurring in this file and how often they occurred. That's a much simpler extractor. Okay, so that's for the closed set where you have a lexicon and you just see whether the words in the lexicon are occurring there. Much simpler, but it's an easier thing to write, but you know, obviously not always useful. But if you have free-flowing text, then if somebody segmented and said, this is one segment, this is another segment, tell me what this segment corresponds to, what this segment corresponds to. And suppose I have already decided that the only classes available are person name and the state name. Then I'm essentially, you know, classifying each segment into one of those classes. Okay? And then, of course, if I did not segment beforehand, then you also have to do segmentation and classification together. So one simple idea for that would be sliding window. You take a window of size K and you slide it by size M. And then for each sliding window, you see if you have a segment. If so, what is its class? Okay. Now clearly, one of the issues there is it depends on the size of the sliding window. Okay. For example, something like hope might come at the end of a window and then it will become a word, whereas it might come in the beginning of a window, which also includes the last name of the person, and then it will be easier to classify it as a person name. Okay. There is sliding window protocols. There are in trying to get the, this basically is trying to get the segments as well as classify them. And another way of getting segments as well as classify them is basically instead of having one single sliding window being shifted with the exact same offset every time, you essentially consider the segment is begin end, and the begin and end independently move. Okay? It will be a more complex algorithm. And then a version of that which is actually quite useful in things especially like postal addresses is this finite state machine, where sometimes the segment for the street name might be small, might be big. It might be 2 words long, might be 7 words long. The moment you start getting a number, then probably it's the apartment number on the street. So the street segment is over. Okay? So the segment size can be varying, and what you need to do is as you are going over the text words, each text word is being generated by a state. You know, this state is the city name, and then the city name is over these 3 words, and then the street name, these are the 5 words, and then this is the apartment name, it may be 1 or more words. Okay? In that case, looking at the actual words being written, you're trying to figure out what are the most likely state assignments for each of these words. That for some of you, this is very similar to speech recognition problem. It's very similar to several other problems where you have a signal which corresponds to some internal state that you cannot actually observe. And, you know, a set of ideas like hidden Markov models can be used for that. I won't talk about it, but it's a very nice approach for that. And then in the end, in fact, you can really do context-free grammars. You can essentially parse the sentence, write the syntactic tree, and write your extraction patterns over the syntactic tree. To the extent it is real text, you know, and to the extent you have good grammar for it. And so depending on, I mean, the complexity of the IE methods goes higher as you go this way. But you, as you go here, you are allowing less and less templated text. So you are assuming less about, you know, the constancy of the structure in the text. Okay. So finally got to the 3 examples. Maybe I'll at least, you know, do some of them before we end. But I did mention approximately what each of them are, and I'll just give you as these as 3 specific points in the entire spectrum of IE approaches. The first one is unwrapping, which uses path expressions on the DOM trees. The second one uses path expressions on the parse trees, and the third one, as I said, essentially just tags words in existing files. Okay. So for the extraction for the templated text, this slide is basically trying to make you believe that there exists a large amount of pages on the web which are really generated by databases on demand. They didn't exist until you asked the question. And then there is a database which takes the question and generates dynamically a page. And so when they do that, they'll always have the exact same structure. The words on the file might change, but they will always be in the same exact template. Okay? So when you have templated text and the databases are essentially putting this templated text in some sort of a pseudo-English, getting the pattern back involves just untemplating it, unwrapping. Okay, so in fact, the relation was wrapped by the database front end so that you can read it in English. And your program needs to unwrap it so that you'll get the relation back. Okay, that is the very first type of extractors that have happened, and those are actually the thing is that it looks as if you're assuming too much structure on the web. And how can you have enough possible uses for it? And the thing that you want to understand is there will be a lot of use for this, because web really is not just pages generated, handwritten by you, but also a large number of database backed pages, which just on demand generate a web page. And in that case, they will wind up having exactly the same structure. Okay, that's the same reason why, for example, Amazon, every page of Amazon has pretty much the same structure. Okay, so when you have that kind of a constant structure, then oftentimes what would be helpful is to look at the DOM tree. Okay, remember I said the capital of India is New Delhi, and I said you can write an extractor which says skip, 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 pick, skip, skip, pick. Okay, that was an extractor. It would actually work if, in fact, the capital doesn't have two words. New Delhi is two different words, so it might actually wind up picking India New instead of India New Delhi, because, you know, that's what I wrote. Okay, here actually what I can also do is I can look at the DOM tree and say, so the books are being described as, there's an HTML, there's a body in which with the B tag, that means the bold element, the name of the book is written with in bold. Okay, and then the by is written in italic font, and then the author name is written after that. If that is the case, if all books are like this, then I can write title can be extracted from every element by essentially going this way. Okay, and author can be extracted by using this path expression. Notice that if we somehow agreed upon a pre-specified XML tagging structure, then I don't need to screen scrape. What I'm doing here is sort of scraping the screen to pick the pieces in the screen which correspond to the title, the author, etc. To the extent I believe that this whole thing is actually database backed, the database probably already knows the tags, and it put a style sheet which converted the tag into HTML tags, which requires me to screen scrape. If I have an API to the database, then I'll directly get the XML, and so I don't have unwrapping at all. If I have direct XML available, I would basically say that title begin, name of the book, title end, and that's all I need to pick. Okay? So this unwrapping software, unwrapping as a research area, is useful in as much as you, the guy who's trying to extract the pattern, doesn't have a cooperative agreement with the provider. If you have cooperative agreement with the provider, they will provide you an API directly, which will directly show you the XML structure. And so you don't need to do this. If you don't, you can still do this because you can write this. Now, of course, if you have an uncooperative, so if in this case, how do I write these expressions? I can write it by hand. I can do it semi-automated. I can basically, on the page, I can mark an area and say title, mark another area and say author. And then behind the scenes, the macro maker essentially can figure out what the path expressions are. Okay, in particular, if I give multiple examples for titles, let's say, and different titles wind up having different path expressions, then it might have to generalize over those path expressions to find the disjunctive or the most general path expression to get to the title. That would be learning. Okay, but if everything is exactly in the same format, then it's, you know, like Emacs macros, I can just tell you one example and you do the same thing for every page. Okay, So users show example and the program remembers the path expression. So here is a case in point. This is Amazon source, and you know this is a system, you know, Craig Knobloch and his students did, where essentially you look at the Amazon page and then you can outline pieces and say this is title, this is author. And then the system behind you comes up with its own path expressions. And then it will apply that. So this is the Emacs macro, essentially. And it will apply it to every page to get all the titles, authors, prices for a whole bunch of books. Okay? Now, of course, had Craig Knobloch had direct connection to Amazon in terms of API, then they didn't have to screen scrape. Okay? So screen scraping is only needed because you already, we don't have an agreement, so essentially there is the data which got into XML, which got into HTML, and you only got it after HTML, so you have to go back to XML. If you knew them, you got the XML, in which case it's very easy, because you guys can agree, you know, what the tags are. Okay, now of course, if the screen scraping is required when the source, the provider doesn't even know I exist, they didn't think that, they did not allow me to, you know, kind of scrape their screen, and I'm just doing it without telling them. And so once in a while they can change the screen. They might, for example, you know, change it such that Lindbergh now, which is the title, is in a different color and in a different font. And to the extent my extractor looked at bold being the font for the title, it will fail. For example, the extractor in this case did author A. Scott Berg, title Lindbergh, price 21, availability, this title usually ships. Right? So this is the database it was able to populate for each book page. Now after a while Amazon will change, and then it will wind up getting a whole bunch of nil values. Worse yet, actually, you could start, so the author is nil, title is nil, price is 21, this title usually ships. At least if you get a whole bunch of nil values, you'll wake up and say, hey, something went wrong, let me go fix my wrapper. Worse yet, it just gets words from some other part of the file. And anything can be title, so it just picks some other three words and puts it as a title. You won't even know that it is actually failing. Okay, for the longest time, and even now, many startup companies are based essentially on scraping somebody else's data using a wrapper, and they will pay undergraduate, graduate students to maintain the wrapper. And so you tell your mom and dad that I'm in internet world, and what you're doing is scraping screen. Okay, right? You know, cheap labor is always useful, right? People always buy it. So anyway, even as simple a thing as wrapper, there is, if you want to generate an industry around it, you need to make a wrapper, you need to maintain the wrapper, you need to understand that the wrapper started giving junk results before the users are stuck with it. Do you see what I'm saying? So think of, instead of Amazon, suppose you're doing the same exact thing over employment classifieds. Classified ads on employment opportunities. Now, you wrote a wrapper for Washington Post, one for New York Times, one for LA Times, and none of them you had any cooperative agreement, so they get to change their wrapping, you know, their layouts anytime. And so suddenly you start finding jobs which don't exist in places that don't even actually correspond to places, right? And if you the mediator doesn't realize your wrapper is dead, then essentially your users the next day will be saying you have 85 dream jobs in places that don't exist. Because once you start opening it, you see they are not cities at all. And you will stop using that particular mediator anymore. So what they used to do in companies like Jungly, companies like Monster, companies like Flipdog, what they used to do before they started having this cooperative agreement, which just completely removes this screen scraping, what they used to do is every night, the you know well-paid undergraduate and graduate students will rewrite the wrappers for the next day. And if in fact New York Times and Washington Post are crazy enough to change their layout during the day, God help you. Okay? So this sort of de-glamorizes, you know, the whole idea of internet agencies. And Jungly, as I told you, was bought long, long back by Amazon. Flipdog was actually a company which then generated a whole bunch of information extraction systems, and this was a whole bunch of machine learning people who were in that company for a while. it made some money and it spun off some companies and they all went back to research again. Okay. So, you know, you have, this is like your life cycle of wrappers, interestingly. Okay. So, as I said, this is kind of a basis for many startups. And furthermore, this whole area is going out the window the moment you start having direct cooperative agreement with the provider, because then you don't need to screen scrape. Okay, so this is always, you know, to some extent, I already said information extraction itself is kind of a middle technology. When you can do NLP, you don't need information technology, information extraction. And wrapping and unwrapping is one more middle. When you have agreements with your providers, you don't need wrapping and unwrapping. Okay. So that's one. The next one, which at least I can tell you, the Semtag Seeker, I might not be able to, you know, complete the discussion in the class, but this is actually quite interesting to you, which is, let's write, how do we deal with patterns, general patterns in free-flowing text? Okay? Now the interesting thing is, normal English sentences, you can actually write part of speech taggers. You know, there are off-the-shelf syntax analysis for English, and I'm sure it's available for several other languages too, which will at least say in this sentence, this is a noun phrase, this is a verb phrase, and you know, this is the syntax parse tree. Now the interesting thing is, parse tree looks like a DOM tree. Okay? So I can actually write extraction patterns on the parse tree as against the DOM tree. And that would be patterns in the free-flowing text. Okay, so these are essentially, for example, even though we tend to think that we, you know, we are versatile in our usage of language, remember the Zipf's law, which is when we are speaking, there are two competing tugs. Okay, one of which basically is you also want to be understood fast. And if you want to be understood fast, you better say the same thing in the same way every time, because then it reduces the amount of work the other guy has to do. If you speak in, you know, obfuscated C code, then, you know, you can pat your back, but very few people are able to understand what you're saying. Okay? So you tend to write, for example, things in the same way. So for example, Seattle is a city. Now that turns out whenever I say X is a Y, more often than not, X is an instance of class Y. So there you have a simple way of generating a huge number of entities for unary predicates. Whenever you say X is a Y, you say Y of X is true. So city Seattle, okay, or rose is a flower, flower rose, okay, Rav is a teacher, teacher Rav. So you see how many patterns you are able to generate just because you are essentially looking at a noun phrase is a noun phrase. Okay, so if you have already done the syntactic analysis, then you are looking for noun phrase is a noun phrase pattern, and that gives you a pattern. Okay, now of course the question is, so you need to do part of speech tagging, syntactic analysis, and then you can actually use the patterns, the is a kind of patterns. These are sort of the meta patterns to extract facts. Okay, so as I said, this analogy here is you're using the syntax tree, the parse tree, in the same way you use the DOM tree. So in some sense, they are very closely connected. And in a way, this is sort of reverse history. We had parse trees before we had DOM trees, because our languages always had grammar. DOM tree is sort of a display grammar, right? And we are using that in the previous case. Here you are using the actual noun phrase verb phrase structure. Except that to do this, you need to know what is the syntactic grammar, what's the grammar of the language. Okay, and there exist, for English, there exist easy taggers out there, and you can write a bunch of these patterns of this form, cities such as Boston, Los Angeles, and Seattle. Okay. Now I can say that whenever you have a pattern which says C, such as noun phrase 1, noun phrase 2, and noun phrase 3, then you can write it is a this, this, is a this, this, is a this, this. You would agree. Looks like a reasonable thing. So you actually have the way of converting syntax into unary predicates at least, right? So template-driven extraction, where the template is actually in terms of syntax tree, and you might be thinking, I never write templated English, but remember this, you do write templated English, because if you take too much poetic license, then, you know, remember, whenever you write a piece of prose, you can give it to the style evaluators, and they'll give one of them, I think Kincaid or something, will give a number, which is like 12, means your prose is probably only going to be understood by people who have at least done 12th grade or more. And if you want to be understood by everybody in the world, you should be writing prose that can be understood by 6th standard or the 4th standard dropout, because that's what the rest of the world, most of the world is. Okay? And so you want to reduce the complexity of your sentence. Shakespeare obviously didn't know about this. Okay? But if you want to be understood, newspapers are written such a way that they could be understood by 5th standard, 6th standard kids. So you kind of probably feel bored because you know a lot more English, and so you should be reading Shakespeare. Okay? But newspapers are written such that they will have almost the same pattern. For example, all news articles will start with the first paragraph that gives away the entire story. You write a novel like that, you better be a really good novelist. There are novels in the world which will give away the climax and you will still read the entire novel. Right? I mean, God of Small Things is, for example, one of them. I wrote that other day. There are many other novels which will give away the climax and you will still read the entire novel. Newspaper articles are written such a way that if you just read the first sentence, you will still know what happened. Okay? There is no climax that is being kept away for you. And that's the template they will always use. So if you want to extract the main point of a novel, there is no place where you can pick it up. If you want to extract the main point of a New York Times article, pick the first paragraph. That's the main point. Why did they do that? Because they know that most of their readership is very impatient, probably does not want, you know, all the subtleties of the issue, and let's give them the message first, then talk about subtleties later. Okay, in all those cases, you can write these kinds of extractors. In this particular case, you know, the sentence structure itself, you can write this kind of an extractor. So, now the problem, of course, is everything has exceptions. You know, while we do this most of the time, sometimes we have an exception. I mean, that's why we say every rule has an exception. Okay, it's the rule, exceptions that define the rule or something. So I listen to pretty much all music but prefer country such as Garth Brooks, right? I hope most of you understand. I mean, this is country music and Garth Brooks is a, you know, singer, and now your analysis thinks Garth Brooks is a country, right? You know, I don't know how his dieting is going on, but I think he's still small and he's probably just a person, not a country, okay? And so the same analyzer got you the wrong facts. He'll give you million facts, some are right, some are wrong. Which brings me to the Linus Pauling question. Generate a whole bunch of facts, check which are right. How do I do that? How do I do that? I go back to my old idea, let's ask the search engines. Why? Because search engines have looked at the entire world of web pages, and you should be able to tell based on that whether in fact Garth Brooks is more like a country or more like a singer, for example. So in particular, suppose I'm trying to see whether Seattle is a city or not, then you can check the kind of the information content of Seattle and city together versus Seattle being alone. Okay? And this is basically the probability. So this is, so what you want to do is the conditional probability that the word Seattle, given that it's Seattle, the probability that it's a city. So P of city given Seattle, which will be by definition P of city and Seattle by P of Seattle. These are the probabilities. Now these probabilities, you can extract them in terms of the number of files which have the word Seattle and city together, which would be the numerator, the number of files that have the word Seattle. That's the denominator. So I have a way of estimating the conditional probability of Seattle given city. I'm sorry, city given Seattle. Okay, so in this case, if I were to do this, and I did this morning, just this morning, the number of pages that Google has which have the word Seattle in them are 107 million pages. This is the only thing that I need, by the way. I need to write a little extractor for this. Because Google always puts the number of it right there. Okay? So there are 107 million pages which have the word Seattle. And there are, if I want Seattle as well as city, I put Seattle plus city. Again, remember you need to do advanced search once in a while. So you put a plus such that both are required to be there. Okay? And Seattle city, there are 24.7 million pages which have Seattle and city together. Okay, so by my estimation, 24.7 by 107, which is approximately 23%. So Seattle is about, there is 0.23 probability that Seattle is a city. Now you think that's not very good. You know, I mean, you want to be 0.9 probability that Seattle is a city. What matters really is not what is the probability that Seattle is a city, but what is its relative probability that Seattle is a city versus Seattle is a tomato. Right? Okay? So let's check what is the probability that Seattle is a tomato. Right? So Seattle plus tomato, there are 1.5 million pages which have the word Seattle and tomato together. However, thankfully, 1.5 by 107 million will be still 1%, which means Seattle is about 20 times more a city than it is a tomato. It's not that it's not a tomato, but it's more likely to be a city than a tomato. Now, as you're doing this, how many of you know where the Seattle city got its name from? You should know. You should know. Somebody should know here. How did Seattle get its name? Chief Seattle. He was an Indian chief. Seattle is also an Indian chief before he became a city. Okay? Now, if you're trying to figure out whether Seattle, you know, chief, you know, if Seattle is an Indian chief, by this analysis, he would never have a fighting chance. Because the number of pages which think Seattle is a city far outweigh the number of pages which think Seattle is a chief. Okay, to avoid that, and you know, a similar idea is the movie Chicago. Now you want to check whether movie Chicago is a movie or not. Well, Chicago is a movie, I can tell you that. Okay, it came, you know, a couple of years back, and it's a musical, right? However, there are many more pages which think of Chicago as a city than pages which think of Chicago as a movie. So just as Chief Seattle got masked out by cityness of Seattle, okay, Chicago's moviness got masked out by the cityness of Chicago. So if you want to figure out whether Chicago can still be a movie, what you need to see is look at all the pages which don't have Chicago as a city. So that means they should have Chicago minus city in the denominator, Chicago plus movie minus city in the numerator. So I'm computing probabilities by using Google calls, right? So if I were to do this, so hits for Chicago plus movie minus city by hits for Chicago minus city, that will tell me whether Chicago is also a movie apart from being a city. Okay, that's a masked meaning. And if you actually do this, in fact, this thing shows that upfront Chicago being a movie is only 0.02, but after you unmask its cityness, if it's not a city, it's a movie with like 0.21, which is like 972% improvement. So my hope is, you know, is Seattle an Indian chief? You can go home and check. And Seattle, if he's not a city, will he be an Indian chief? Will it be an Indian chief as against being a tomato? And I hope for Native Americans all over the place that Seattle, when it's not a city, is more likely to be an Indian chief than a tomato. I can't be sure because this is all, you know, pages that people just populated. The whole reason this thing is working is because of that point I made very beginning. Web is not just a random set of pages. Web is a set of pages that you guys made. It's about our collective knowledge. We might be having some adversarial stances here and there, but really, it's not just randomly made. And so you can use these, use that information to actually decide whether or not these are facts. Okay? One last thing, and you get to go home. And this is essentially Now, when I'm trying to see whether something is a city or not, city is the class I'm trying to decide. Whether or not something is a city is basically depend on, so X is a city means X is a city. X has a population of means X is a city. X is the capital of Y means X is a city. X has X's baseball team probably means X is a city. Unless, you know, X happens to be, you know, George Steinbrenner or something. Okay? In which case it's a city. Normally city is baseball. So what these are all the symptoms of being a city in the text documents. So city is a disease, these are all the symptoms of the cityness. For each symptom, you can compute the conditional probability. Then you use naive Bayes classifier to compute the probability of it being a city given these symptoms. And if you pick the top K symptoms which have the highest PMI and then put them together, that's like feature selection followed by naive Bayes classification. Okay? So I gave you at least two widely different, hopefully widely different, extractors. One is only works for templated text. One works for normal text, but it depends on the syntactic template. Okay, I'll stop here. There are a couple more slides that you can look at, which are about SemTag and Seeker, where essentially, as I said, it's the application is more interesting there. What they have is there is a huge ontology that humans have made called the TAP ontology that exists somewhere in Stanford. It has some 700,000 concepts and with the easy hierarchy. Okay, and then there are text files, and what SemTag and Seeker does is looks at your file, tries to take pieces from your file and put annotations on it saying this is an instance of this class, this is an instance of this class, this is an instance of this class. And the moment you make them instances of class, so basically, if I have the Chicago Bulls announced yesterday that Michael Jordan will, SemTag and Seeker can tell you the Chicago really is a resource which corresponds to the basketball, I mean Chicago Bulls is a resource which corresponds to basketball team Bulls, which exists in the ontology. Okay, and similarly, yesterday that blah, 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 Jordan Michael, this is a Michael Jordan resource, which is a different Michael Jordan resource from the machine learning Michael Jordan resource. They both exist, let's say, in the ontology. So you're able to make the connection between the words in the text and the ontology. Okay, remember the, what's the Verizon Wireless commercial? That's the place to end. You know, Verizon Wireless commercial, this guy would be walking around, I mean, a girl or a guy would be walking around, the entire Verizon team is behind them. Supposedly, they are providing the infrastructure. The moment you have the infrastructure, the words mean a lot more. Similarly, if you have a bunch of text here, and SemTag and Seeker makes the connections between the text and the Verizon team ontology, in this case, TAP ontology, then suddenly you can do a lot more inference on the page. Okay, the question now is, classifying each of these words here into instances of this. Okay, so this is a great example of how to use information extraction to make semantic web feasible. Because if you remember, we said in that Ramayana example that this I can give you, this I can give you, but I don't feel like writing this. This I can give you because only a couple of people in the world have to write down how the world works, and that's more or less true for everybody. This I'll give you because this is my file. And if somebody else can do this, then I have the entire semantic web infrastructure that I can use. So SemTag and Seeker obviously got a prize. It actually, just a second, it actually used reasonably simplistic techniques for classifying the words into the ontologies. And one simple thing, the reason I wanted to actually show this to you was for each ontology concept, they had some use cases where that concept was used, which are sentences. And sentences are bags. Okay? So for each ontology concept here, there was a bag of text where that particular concept was used in the past. And then when that concept occurs here, you look at the window surrounding that text. Take what? If you have bags, what do? Vector similarity between them. And if the vector similarity is high, you will say it corresponds to that ontology. That's what SemTag and Seeker did. Another idea that you know how to use. Okay? This is already 6 years old. You can do probably much better than this. What's more interesting is they did it for like, you know, I think 700,000 concepts here, and they did automated tagging for like something like 700,000 pages. It was a project at IBM. It stopped after that, but this is a great idea because eventually, when the information extraction techniques become particularly useful, particularly effective, then you can apply them this way to make semantic web possible. Okay, I'll stop there. Yes. Those will get cancelled out. We can talk about it outside. Okay, and there's also a paper on that. You can look at that too. Okay? Please eat donuts, otherwise I would be much bigger by the time I come to the next class.